Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. This week, I delayed publishing the weekly podcast. I just couldn't figure out a way to speak about what I feel. Then it dawned on me that we live in a country for which at every public affair, every public event, we stand, we face the flag, and recite the following. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands. And it concludes with liberty and justice for. And that's what dawned on me this week. With liberty and justice for. As I watched that police officer violently, gently, deliberately, maliciously squeeze the life out of George Floyd on public television in the middle of the day, casually, callously, removing the breath of a human being without some recognition of his humanity. His anger, his supremacy, his badge, his uniform, his gun, his taser, upon which all of that rested. I watched. And the phrase, with liberty and justice for whom? With liberty and justice, my God. Several years ago, at the intersection of Community Drive and Horace Harding Parkway, I was pulled over by a police officer. My friend, a white woman, decided at that moment, in light of the questions that I was being asked, where am I coming from? Whose car is this? Have you been drinking? In light of these questions, hands on the hood of the car, in light of these circumstances, she departed the passenger side of the car and began to assert her right. And in that moment, my fear of this situation escalated. You see, as a black man in America, it's very difficult to assert your rights as a citizen of this country. It's very difficult asserting your inalienable rights as a citizen in the face of a police officer on the streets of America. You see, because when we assert our rights as a citizen of this country, it is interpreted as belligerence. How dare you? But she asserted her right, and it was merely seen as a citizen forcefully asserting her rights. With liberty and justice for some. This flooded my mind. With liberty and justice for whom? That's the question. That is, for me, the question afoot. Why is it that when I assert my right as a citizen, I am considered belligerent? And when someone who is not like me asserts their right as a citizen, it's merely seen as a legitimate action. Why? So as I sat there and watched for 8 minutes and 46 seconds, as I watched the life blood, the life breath squeezed out of a human being that looks like me, that looks like my son, the only question that came to my mind was, with liberty and justice for whom? I had the privilege of marching with the next generation of protesters. And notwithstanding my question, my burning question, with liberty and justice for who? I have to say, I'm hopeful. I am deeply hopeful. I am hopeful because many of the people shouting in the streets, Black Lives Matter. Many of the people drowning out the response of All Lives Matter are people that I consider to be privileged Americans. I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful because these are the young people. I have witnessed something marvelous. That maybe one day, just maybe one day, we will be able to complete the Pledge of Allegiance with the words, with liberty and justice for all. We'll be right back with the conversation.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
Every 10 years, the census comes along, and it seems like everyone I know always asks the same two questions. What is the census, and why does it even matter? Let me give it to you straight. The census counts every single person living in America. An accurate count of our community tells us where there are more people, and where there are more people, there are more needs. Our participation could impact how public funding flows to our schools, health clinics, senior care, job training, and housing. It even determines our congressional representation. I don't know about you, but it sure sounds like the census matters to me. This year, take a little time for the 2020 census. You can complete it online, by phone, or by mail, and make sure you count everybody you live with. Your mama, daddy, sweetheart, babies, roommates, everyone. This chance only comes every 10 years, so let's step up and be counted.
Shape your future. Start here. Learn more at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
Today, we rejoin our conversation with world-famous trombonist Clifton Anderson. Mr. Anderson's upcoming release, Been Down This Road Before, will drop later this year. So please, stay tuned. So to my tiny story, because I really want to keep focusing on you. As a teenager, I remember going into Manhattan. I used to go and listen to all of this audiophile gear at every audiophile place that you can think of. And I walked into one of them. I don't even remember the name of it now. It was close to NYU. And I listened to Sonny Rollins live in Denmark, 1965. Oh. And the piece I listened to was There Will Never Be Another You. Uh-huh. And where does the cost come from? Well, I literally had to buy the speakers that I was listening to it on because it forced me. I mean, I was just so drawn into the music. And
so you became an audiophile at the same time.
Absolutely. There, you know, Mr. Sonny Rollins cost me thousands of dollars.
It's Sonny's fault. I'm going to tell him about that.
That was just a wonderful experience for me. Aside from Sonny Rollins, do you think you can point to a
person or an experience that really sort of took you in a particular direction with regard to your music?
I don't know if there's any one artist or musician that had that as much significant influence. I mean, it's like a kind of an amalgam of a lot. To be able to spend some time with Clyde Hampton. The great Clyde Hampton.
Absolutely.
And I learned a lot from him about music, about playing the trombone, and about, it's just part of my development also. Clyde Hampton had a group. I was in school at the time. I was in my last, I think I was in my last year at the Manhattan School of Music.
Right.
I got a phone call from a female trombonist named Janice Robinson. And I heard about Janice because she was kind of well, her name was kind of well known around New York City amongst trombonists because she was an excellent player.
Right.
And there weren't that many female trombone players that could play on that level in New York at the time.
Right, right.
So I had heard of her name, but I had never really met her or anything. But she called me up, and we had the same teacher. She went to Manhattan School of Music and had graduated a few years before me. And we had the same teacher. She had called our mutual teacher to find out if trombone players that played well that were at the school, because Clyde Hampton was together a trombone for like the best young players in the city. So she gave me a call. She had heard about me. She didn't really know that much. She was just, I guess she was just going on what she might have been told about me, which hopefully was good enough to get me to go down there. So
right.
I went down and I sat in, I guess it was kind of like a semi-audition with Slide's group.
Right.
And he was putting together the group at the time. And the group, I will say that was a very, very important part of my career development, being there with all those people, because they were all, he put together a group of 9 trombone players and a rhythm section. And if you're familiar with Clyde Hampton's writing, he's one of the greatest arrangers that we've had in the music. And he would write for the trombone, especially for this trombone choir.
Right.
He wrote for the trombone like you would hear writers write for saxophones.
Wow.
So it was not like your normal kind of trombone chart. So when I got down there and I, you know, we started reading through some of this material, I was like, man, what is this? You know, he's writing lines like bebop lines on the trombone. And this is like a whole choir playing. So it was really an amazing. And I was at Manhattan School of Music, and I mean, we had trombone ensemble, we had brass choir. You know, I had all that training.
Right.
But it was nothing like this.
My goodness.
And I also got to meet all of the prominent young guys that were playing trombone in the New York City tri-state area.
Right.
Because they all were there. The best guys were there in that group. And so I met my man Steve Turay, was there. Janice Robinson, who was the trombone player who got me
Correct.
To come down. She was there. There was another guy named Bill Ohashi, who used to do a lot of studio dates around New York, well-known guy at that time.
Right.
That he was there. The late, great Clifford Adams.
Wow.
Who played with, well, in later years, he became the trombonist for the group Kool & the Gang.
Uh-huh.
But he was a great, great trombone player. He was there as well as Papo Vasquez, the Latin trombonist from the Fania All-Stars.
Yes.
And let me see who, I don't want to leave anybody out. This was the original group. Bass trombone player named Doug Proviance and another bass trombone player named Earl McIntyre.
Uh-huh.
There may be one or two guys that I'm, one maybe one guy that I'm leaving out, I can't think of, or maybe Clarence Banks, who was still, who's now today still with the Count Basie Orchestra.
Ah, I see.
All these guys, that was the original group that was called the World of Trombones.
The World of Trombones.
The World of Trombones, that was the original group.
Uh-huh.
Now you had guys who came in the band later, who were very well known, trombonist today who came in later, Robin Eubanks.
Right.
Who else? Frank Lacey, Conrad Herwig. But the beautiful thing about that group was that Slide would bring in veteran trombone players to come in and play with us. So Curtis Fuller would come in and play with us. Benny Powell played with us. Britt, the late great Britt Woodman, who was with Duke Ellington's orchestra, played with us. So, you know, you got to sit next to these veteran people. And, you know, there's no experience. Like that. Other, you know, you can't duplicate that. The only way to experience that is to be there and to be sit next to experienced musicians, get something
yes.
from your elders. You always get something from your elders. Unfortunately, this generation of younger players don't really have that understanding.
Ah.
I say that they all don't, but it's not like it used to be, you know.
Right.
Things
right.
are very, very different in the business now than they used to in the industry now.
You're listening to trombonist, composer, producer, and educator, Clifton Anderson.
Amazing. So, amazing.
Yeah.
So everyone
I guess that group,
go ahead.
That group was really a significant group. Unfortunately, we couldn't keep the band together.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the rhythm sections, you know, Slide had put together these famous, there were a lot of great, great rhythm section players that played with us. We had the late Albert Daly play piano. Mm-hmm. The late Hilton Ruiz played piano with us.
Wow.
We had Buster Williams would play with us. Idris Muhammad was a drummer with us for a long time.
Yes.
You know, there were a lot of great people that came through that band.
That came through.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That was great. As we talk about all these great people that you've uh-huh. had the opportunity to work with and play with and learn
yeah.
from, I
yeah.
was struck by the fact that you played with the Mighty Sparrow.
Oh.
So I'm thinking, I'm thinking about you, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. He goes from the Mighty Sparrow, sort of the Caribbean's premier orator, and calypsonian, and that's on the one hand, and on the other hand, you play with people like Paul Simon, who literally is like the United States folklorist extraordinaire, and then here you sit with your trombone.
Well, I feel like this really requires a long answer because it can take us into a lot of different areas. Why?
Take your time.
But the thing is, try to as concise as I can. I like music. Let me start with that.
Right.
I like good music.
Right.
You know, there's something about certain types of music that appeals to me and it doesn't really matter what the genre is. If it's done very well, it's done very well. So I'm drawn to certain kinds of music. I grew up listening to this music that we call jazz, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I also grew up listening to Motown, Sly and the Family Stone.
Right.
All the horn bands I listened to when I was younger, Chicago, you know.
Sure.
Mandrill, you know, Kool and the Gang. I used to play the bands around New York.
Right.
That were pop groups that some of them made it, some of them didn't. But there were a lot of horn bands in the 70s.
There were.
In New York. Mm-hmm. In the very early 70s, there were a lot of horn bands around New York. You were a horn player. And also, in terms of recording, everybody was recording horns, live horns, in those days. So if you were a horn player, you could get into a whole variety of situations.
Wow.
Some of them were not, just like anything else, you know, some of them were dud.
Right,
you know,
right,
but
right.
there were a lot of good. But in those days, I think people were making more honest music. They were trying to make more honest music than they are now.
Yes.
You know? So I'm trying to say that I was very open to working in a lot of with certain artists in different situations. The fact that they recorded a lot of horns back in those days, and I was always very quick. I was very fast in the studio.
Right.
So a lot of the producers liked me because I could go in and just cut quickly.
Uh-huh.
And then we had a group of guys that were like, play together a lot. And we, at some point, we realized that we were showing up on all the same dates all the time, you know. So we kind of like created a small working kind of circle of horn players.
Mm-hmm.
Played very well. We would go in and we started getting hired for like a whole lot of different things. And one of the things that I kind of weaseled my way into, I should say, were the Calypso circuit.
Ah.
I'm on pretty much, I would say, almost every Calypso record that was made between 1974,
uh-huh.
maybe 1973 or 1974. Up until about 1980.
Really?
So yeah, if you look at almost every Calypso record, I'm the trombone player on there. I could go through the whole laundry list of the artists. I mean, I work with Calypso Rose, Lord Nelson, Mighty Sparrow, Kitchener, Lord Barron.
Wow.
Calypso Crazy, Poser, Blue. He called himself Blue Boy. I think he called himself Super Blue now. Or he did. You know, they're all of them. I worked with all of them.
Wow.
Arrow. I recorded the original version of Hot, Hot, Hot. That's on there.
Really?
Yeah. I still have a friend, actually, who's down in Trinity now,
mm-hmm.
who was the top producer of at that time. His name is Leston Paul. And he produced all of those Arrow records, and he produced a lot of other people. I recorded for Byron Lee and the Dragonaires, you know, all these people.
Sure.
So I did a lot of... And anyway, that's part of me. That's part of my background. You know, my people are from, of my mother's side is St. Thomas and St. Croix, and on my father's side is Jamaica.
Oh, wow. You know? Okay.
So, yeah, so I have, although I was born here,
right,
that's in my DNA.
Yes, that's the genesis of it all. And thank God for America, right? Right? How, these two people met.
You know, I think that's why also the everybody on the Calypso, all those artists, really, I think they appreciated me because I was able to. That music is not, you know, to make that music, there's, you know, to many people, there's the idea when they hear somebody that has a certain level of technical proficiency, they think that they're a great musician, but they're not necessarily a great musician. There are a lot of things that go into making music more than just the technique. The technique is like the flash. Mm-hmm. That you get, and people immediately respond to that. But in music, in ethnic music, like Calypso music, the music has to really, and I'll use this word because for me, this is a word that kind of describes it best for me. It may not, but the music has to swing.
You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
The word swing, the way I use the word swing, doesn't have to be jazz music to swing.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean is that the music has to have a feeling.
Right.
It's got to have a groove. It has to have a groove. It has to have a rhythmic thing in it.
Yes.
And this is a cultural thing, and that it all goes back to Africa, really.
Yes.
The rhythms.
Yes.
The power of the rhythm that's in the music that defines these different things. But in Calypso music, the rhythms, you have to understand the rhythms. So I don't care how much technique you have.
Uh-huh.
You know, we had guys who were coming, you know, really, really great lead trumpet players would come in. And we cut these tracks and the horns would sound like crap. Because those trumpet players, they could play high, they could play strong, they wouldn't crack a note,
mm-hmm.
but they did not have the understanding of the rhythm.
Of the rhythm, yes.
So we couldn't make the music. We couldn't really make that music with those guys. I'm saying that to say that I had an understanding of the music. Now, you know, it's not like I studied it. It was just kind of in me.
Yes,
you know?
I knew what
it was. So when I would approach those lines, I could swing those lines.
Exactly.
And so that's why they liked me. And so I tried to apply that to everything, all the music that I would perform. I was performing pop music. I listened to a lot of James Brown when I was younger coming up, and a lot of different arrangers that were in the pop world, how they use horns, how the horns worked, those horn lines that I really loved. You know, what was it so special about the way those things sounded? And I try to incorporate that, learn, understand those kind of things so that when I went on a job playing with a pop artist, recorded some stuff with Keith Richard.
Right.
You know, I recorded with Paul Simon and all those guys. I wanted to make it as authentic as I could for what that music is.
For what that was. You know, I was going to call you a preacher. And the reason I was going to call you preacher is because on your album, And So We Carry On, I find myself gravitating to Remember This. And, you know, what you just said to me with regard to this breadth of experience and how you bring to the musical experience for people like me, I now understand why it is I am so drawn to Remember This, because it seems to be an amalgam of all of these rhythms and experiences that you have. Now, I don't know if that's one of your favorite pieces. I don't generally ask people what's their favorite pieces, you know, that kind of thing. But I'll just tell you that for me, Remember This.
Now, which one? Oh, Remember This.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous
okay.
piece.
Yeah.
So we're coming to the end of our podcast. And I want you to talk a little bit about something that's near and dear to me, the educator in you. And I know that you have a program that's called We Love Jazz. Okay. We Love Jazz. I know that as an educator, this is a big part of your experience. So could you tell us, tell the audience a little bit about what We Love Jazz is, and maybe even tell us about how post-COVID-19, if in fact we can get back to this, how maybe we can connect with that program as a community.
Okay. Well, very briefly, We Love Jazz is a pro. And by the way, I don't like that word jazz particularly. I use it because it's the word that we have to use to describe this music right now. It's not a word that was given to the music by musicians.
Right.
I won't go deeply into that. The program that I started, We Love Jazz, is geared towards young people. Usually I'm asked at Black History Month to come to go through different school systems in the city, present this program. It gives a very, very basic introduction to like third and fourth graders, fifth and sixth graders that may not have much background or knowledge of what music is. We give them a very basic understanding about what the elements of music are, melody, you know, harmony and rhythm,
okay,
and how they work together. Once they understand that, then we start to explain to them what jazz music is and what it is that makes jazz music different from other styles of music, other forms of music, and how we use melody, harmony, rhythm, and how we use those three elements to change and to manipulate and to come up with something that's totally different than what you start out with.
Right.
And we do it very, very spontaneously. And then we, you know, we give them a little background and history of some of the many great jazz artists and influencers throughout our history, and also how it relates to our culture,
right,
as African Americans and Africa, Africans coming here through the Caribbean, coming up through New Orleans. Why New Orleans is so significant?
Right,
because that's because of the route, the slave route.
Right.
How, and then we just talk about, you know, how the blues is so intrinsic in the music and why it's so intrinsic in the music and how it was used at first to just tell a story, but then it became more a vehicle to uplift the people, you know, all of these things. So we really condensed that into a very quick 1 hour workshop, you know. So that's the basic idea of what We Love Jazz is about. You know, we get them at that age because they're not so brainwashed by society when they're that age yet.
Right.
They are very open. And what we find is that a lot of these young people have never even heard organic instruments before because they're coming up in a world where they're all electronic sounds.
Right.
So
right.
When we play, you know, when our bass player plays an acoustic bass, the kids, their eyes open up, you know.
Yes, yes.
When they hear my horn, their eyes open up. They've never really, a lot of them have never really heard that sound before like that.
Yes.
So it's a very essential program.
Yes,
you know,
I
these days.
I enjoy that. I happen to be involved in public education here on Long Island, and I'm always looking for an opportunity to expand the scope of learning for our children, and that program caught my eye.
That's great. Well, you know, I don't know in this time, I don't know how we'll be able to do it with COVID-19 going on right away.
Sure.
You know, our program is like our music. When we perform, just in general, it's very interactive.
Right.
We're very interactive. This may be a temporary setback. We know that when we return to being able to close proximity with one another again,
yes,
then we'll pick it up from there. We did the last assemblies on March 13th, which was the day before they closed the schools, actually.
Really?
Yeah. And I thought they were going to cancel that performance, but I was there with the kids.
Right.
And we all did it. I don't think there were any results of any problems in that particular school.
Sure. Wow, this is great. I want to thank you for spending some time with us here on the podcast. Mr. Anderson,
thank you
for really just educating us and bringing us on your journey from that first trombone to where we are today, to having someone like me just play over and over again. Remember this.
If I can make a very quick plug.
Sure.
I have a new recording. It took me almost 2 years to make this new record. It was supposed to be released in August. I'm not sure what the release date is going to be now, but your audience can look out for it. It's entitled Been Down This Road Before. And it's really, the theme of it is really has to do with what's going on in our world. And what goes on in a repetitive way in our world, same problems that we keep bringing, coming to the fore
right.
about us. So there's a political message in it as well, or I should say a social, moral message
as
well. I think it's my best work so far, so count for it.
Absolutely, and, we will be.
Of course, Aubrey, you'll be one of the first to get your hands on it anyway.
Absolutely.
Your listeners can look out for it, okay? And I appreciate you having me on the program. I wish you the very best for your future podcast.
Yes.
And I hope to be able to come back maybe sometime.
Absolutely. You've opened some doors that you don't even know you have, but I will be talking to you again, sir. Thank you.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Podcast is brought to you by www.elmont.org, where residents go for cutting-edge commentary, real-time news feeds, and more. Elmont.org, building a stronger community since 1999. Thank you for listening. Between now and the next time we meet, be safe. I'm Aubrey Phillips.